FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's 12/12/17. Well, everything is coming up Bitcoin. Everyone's forgotten about precious metals. Well, they're still involved in the stock market, but the stock market is a very minor bubble compared to the cryptocurrency space. It's even attracted the attention of Danielle Park. Is this just a bubble, Danielle? Well, hey, before we start, housekeeping. Join the show. Email is kl@kerrylutz.com and the Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. And without further ado, Danielle, so what of it?
Well, it's a complex topic, I think. I think that there is, you know, obviously the evolution of blockchain and a borderless virtual currency makes sense in the context of a world that is, you know, heavily online today and largely unbanked. You know, something like 3/4 of the world population doesn't have access to banking, but nearly 80% of it is online and mostly via smartphones in developing countries. So obviously in many of those places, they also have unstable currencies. Think Zimbabwe, you know, even in Greece where they've had runs on banks, bank closures. There's widespread distrust in governments and central banks and banks in general. These factors are all legitimate motivations for wanting to get funds away from the control of a corrupt banking system, frankly, which has lost the trust, deservedly so, of the masses since the financial crisis first erupted in 2008. I think it's incredibly ironic that you have many of these figureheads like the head of JP Morgan, you know, denouncing cryptocurrency and Bitcoin as a fraud and a money laundering tool, when in fact every major bank, of course, has been multiple convictions for money laundering and fraud of every kind. So, you know, this is all part and parcel of the world that we live in, the frenzied mania we have been in for the last decade. You know, it also strikes me that it is the model was first developed, let's face it, by the central banks of the world, who since 2008 have been literally creating credits out of thin air, you know, getting treasury to issue debt and moving the cash through and then giving it to corporations who've been buying back their own shares, all these digital entries, which have pumped up the value of assets without any commensurate increase in income, revenue, you know, wages, the things that matter. So, yeah, I think there's a legitimate theme here, which indeed will continue, no doubt. But I think that there is no question that risk has gone straight up with price. And when I read things like in the news of late about people buying on, you know, cryptos on credit cards, taking out loans against their house, I mean, this is, as I call it, financially suicidal behavior writ large. It's typical of manias, and I think that it's likely to end very badly for many people.
Hey, so you think this is a bubble? And the problem with bubbles, as we know, Danielle, is most people don't know they're in a bubble. When it's happening, you only realize it after the bubble's popped.
And you try and justify it. So I think that, you know, the people that are in it, obviously, some of them have become literally gazillionaires in a matter of, you know, a year or two. The straight up movement in price has been nothing short of breathtaking. So I think that it's obvious that many people, especially since we have a lot of broke people in the world, would look at that and think, oh, you know, if only I'd have got in, or, you know, maybe it's not too late. Maybe I can still get in. And people that have been in have got that reinforcement of, gee, I'm smart. I was right. You know, it's going straight up. I think the much more difficult thing, it's a slippery slope that the human psyche is not ideally suited for, which is how to keep discipline and rules around the lure of easy money. So what happens is, you know, I go back to basics here. I say, first of all, I was writing about that on the blog. The currency of our debt and expenses is actually the currency we need, the the bulk of our money in. So the income we receive. So, you know, I know that a couple of the main proponents of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies or other altcoins, whatever, are asking to be paid in that. Okay. And in many cases, they're also figuring out ways to pay for their life expenses in the same currency. Okay. So that's one thing, right? Now, not everything can be paid for with altcoins, obviously, and not everyone can be paid in them either.
Sure.
So the majority of the population is paying their expenses in things like dollars and euros and yen, wherever they live. You know, they get their income and they pay their expenses. And I say that you need to have the bulk of your net worth in that currency, whatever it is, and particularly if you owe money. So, you know, the proponents of cryptos are saying they believe that, you know, we're going to have another financial crisis, and that when we do, the value of the altcoins are going to go up as everything else crashes. And I say I doubt it. And the reason I say that is the same reason I said that to the gold and silver bugs in 2006-07 when they were, you know, in 11 when they were madly in love with their particular store of value that they championed. And the problem is liquidity. The problem is that the world owes a ton of money today, trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, as you well know, Carrie. And that money is not owed in things like precious metals. It is not owed in things like cryptos. It is owed in mostly dollars and yen and euros, you know. So what mm-hmm. happens is you get into a liquidity crisis in the world and everybody gets desperate for cash. And especially when you look at that chart of margin, you know, that's just the NYSE margin investor credit that right. I put on the blog this week. But it shows how incredibly over indebted even the participants in the stock market are today, right? So they've borrowed so much against this ever escalating stock market that you've had in the S&P in the US in the last couple of years. And they are now, you know, look at that, the relative mountain of debt that's been borrowed against security portfolios today makes 2007 look like, you know, just this, you know, bland, tiny little episode. And that was the financial crisis back there in 08 when people had heavily borrowed. So we're in this whole other planet right now of debt and risk and leverage exposure. And that will have to be paid back. As you saw in the last downturns, whenever the price of the assets start to fall, the debt does not. And the margin calls start coming and people have to sell everything, starting with the most liquid first. And so I am quite confident that we're going to see a sell-off in all the assets across the board. And I think cryptocurrencies are going to be hit as well. Now, the difficulty, as you and I were discussing before, that the call is they are not the most liquid things, right? You've got 1,000 people owning 40% of, for example, Bitcoin in the world. Yeah. You have these exchanges that take big chunks to do transactions. If you want to flip that money back to the currency of your expenses or debt, they take a big chunk, anywhere from 4, 5, 10%, depending on how you're doing that. And it's not necessarily instantaneous, right? And furthermore, you've got governments in some places shutting things down. You've got other hackers stealing currency out of wallets. You've got, you know, even if you've got physical wallets, you've got all sorts of danger around how to keep it intact and safe and stored. So I don't think it's a panacea by any stretch. I don't think that they've solved the problem of how to protect our wealth in these instruments or these credits.
Hey, well, it's interesting that you say that, Danielle, because it's very difficult to look. I know of people, and it's not just a friend of a friend of a friend. One guy is worth a couple hundred million in Bitcoin. I think before the latest run-up, he was worth 230 million. So now that's probably doubled or tripled. And another guy that my friend met at a kind of a Bitcoin libertarian meetup in New Hampshire, this guy doesn't touch his Bitcoin unless he wants to buy a yacht or, I guess, a Gulfstream 550 plus or 650, whatever they're up to now. You know, their stories are out there, and that's what's really turning people on. Fear of missing out. FOMO, right?
So absolutely.
You know what I love about FOMO, Danielle? Because they always say that markets are governed by fear and greed. It's really yeah. FOMO, because FOMO is a combination of fear and greed, right? The greed to get that huge killing and the fear that you're not going to get it. And that's what I love about it.
And also, it's great to make the gains on paper. It's another thing to pocket them and keep them from, to redistribute your risk. And what happens is people become passionately committed to an idea, whether it be stocks, whether it be, metals, whether it be cryptocurrency, whatever it is, they become madly in love with it, whether it be real estate, and they become heavily involved and concentrated. And they forget basic rules like, what do you need, in terms of liquidity, to pay off debt, to pay for things you need in your actual life. And, we've seen that in the survey.
Oh, yeah.
As I was saying, just last month, there was a survey that said just 8% of Bitcoin holders thought they would use Bitcoin to buy goods and services. They're not looking at it as a currency. They're looking at it as a speculation that's gone straight up, and that's great. But you still have to have discipline around how do you get that money into other mediums to diversify your risk. And let's not forget, so through the years, so many famous people, Jesse Livermore is one that people love to quote as the guy who shorted in 29 and was up $100 million. He lost his fortune twice and committed suicide in the end, because that speculative fervor, that obsessive compulsive, mania that overtakes your brain when you win. It's like sitting at the slot machines. Once you've won a lot of times, it's literally a brain chemistry event that makes it more and more difficult for you to rein in and control and cut your gains and take your cash. And until you do that in any business transaction or any speculation, you're certainly at risk of not getting out intact. And, the other thing is that a lot of people forget that you never borrow to speculate. So you see people borrowing right now. Borrowing to speculate is the most risky proposition, right?
Oh, yeah.
And also, you have to limit your wager. If you're deciding that you're going to try and use this, or you want to take a run at it, you must select an amount of money that won't devastate you if it's lost, or if it's captured, or if it's shut down, if it's stolen.
Yeah.
So again, those are the basic things that keep your sanity about you. And listen, whatever age group, whatever, whether you're heavily educated or not in this field, that animal brain, that lizard brain, is susceptible to great danger in these conditions.
Hey, and such a great point that, the Livermore point, all that he died broke, left a trust fund for his wife and basically killed himself. I had an analyst, I was doing a webinar recently, and he said, I advise people to put between 1% and 10% of their investable funds in cryptos, no more than that. And he says, it's like the ultimate speculation. You can't emphasize too much. And I want to go back to something else you said, Danielle. Every bubble, when it gets into its later stages, is always dependent upon a rationalization of why this time is different than all the dozens of bubbles that came before it. You know what the rationalization is now, Danielle, for cryptocurrencies?
What?
Basically that, trying to recall it, I would say that this time it's different because people will pretty much give up fiat currencies because they're rebelling against governments. And the ultimate rationalization is there's billions of people in the world. If 100 million of them just try to buy $100 worth of Bitcoin or a couple hundred dollars, it's going to cause the price to go even higher than it is now. So the rationalization, if I go back, I know I meandered, was that effectively the reason is that because there's such low awareness and such a low level of participation that once people really start participating, it can only go up, right?
Sure.
That's really it.
One argument for sure. But as I say, it goes back to who owes what, where, and what currency. And if you pay attention to that, you realize that the world has never been more levered. Not just households, not just corporations, not just governments. We're talking every single layer of humanity has record levels of debt. And those debts either have to be written off or paid back. They have to be reported in accordance with financial statements that are typically required to be done in, again, fiat currencies issued by governments. So I just don't see, and it may be, that, several years from now, we have other alternative currencies that exist on the internet. But right now, what I see is a feeding frenzy around services, just like you get around any investment theme. You have a whole bunch of people rolling out ETFs and funds and futures, everyone in a panic to cash in on this, you know, big boom in activity. And that's all transactional. Like, those people are all going to make a killing so long as people are trying to get in and out of this particular idea. And the people that are at risk are the ones that are parting with savings. And I go back to, make sure you're defining your bet based on, you know, I could lose this and it's okay. Or if you've won big, if you've been sitting at the table and you've won big here and you've got lots of net worth notionally in this stuff, you have better design yourself a diversification plan, because otherwise, you know, you're going to be left. And I've met so many of these people over the years, Carrie. You know, they are fully loaded on one particular thing because it's been winning, and they lose all context or sense of how to preserve those winnings. And ultimately, that's taken care of because it's taken back in some way.
So what I always tell people is, you can never lose money taking a profit, right? If you've had a huge run-up, should you keep? If you've had a huge run-up, like 100-fold, what do you keep in there? Is it okay
and
to
everyone's
sell
rule set's going to be a bit different. But if you're not sitting down, I mean, I've met people over the years that just take your breath away in their plan. You know, they've got everything in two tech stocks, or they've got everything in one silver company. Or, you know, I've met people who own, you know, shares of a junior mining or anything like that that's gone up a fortune, that they'd have millions of dollars in it. And they'd tell me they'd be building a house. And I would say, well, you've set aside the money for the house, right? Oh, no, I don't want to take it out of the market. I'll just take it out as I go, or I'll get a mortgage and then I'll be able to pay it off later from the speculation that I'm doing in these two companies.
Right.
And I'm like, it mind boggles. And ultimately, it usually ends up the same, where they end up, the asset price crashes, the debt doesn't. They're left having to raise cash, trying to sell things, usually at a discount, to pay back the debt they've borrowed. And all that, you know, period of winnings, so to speak, has vanished. And it can be devastating. Like, it can be absolutely, you know, life altering in a very bad way. So it's important that people not forget that.
Hey, and when it does happen, Danielle, let's not forget, it happens extremely quickly. You think, oh, there'll be a sign, like a flash in the sky or whatever, and it never works out that way, right? I mean, it's always, always.
The other thing that people do routinely is they fall in love with an idea and they forget that the idea is completely different than the actual financial medium or security that they may be participating in. So, for example, they may fully believe in the movement to a borderless currency on the internet, to a movement away from centralized banking, all that. They may entirely buy that, just as they, you know, may have entirely bought the idea of the internet in the late 1990s being revolutionary, changing the world. Absolutely. But that does not mean that the securities or the instruments that people are trading are worth the valuations or the price point at which they are. A case in point, you know, you can pick any one, but Apple shares, an incredible company that dominated the past decade. Everybody had an iPhone and an iPad, and, you know, we were just taken over by Apple. But that did not mean that the price of the share did not crash more than 80% in 2000 at the start of its big business boom, and 60% in the last downturn. So never confuse the instrument that people are trading with the longevity of the idea or theme or product itself. And I think that's something that people forget routinely as well.
I think it's really important what you're saying there, and really great point. And I guess that's it for now. So we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Have a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Well, we'll talk to you before the New Year's. Anyway, find Danielle's work over at jugglingdynamite.com. Sign up for her newsletter. Hey, sign up for ours at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Questions, comments, be a part of the show. Email us, KL@carrielutz.com. I was only 15 emails behind. Now I'm about 50, but I'll get to work on them. Hey, don't forget the Twitter feed at Carrie Lutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Danielle, enjoy the warm weather where you're going, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.